Hi, this is Lindy, the creator and host of Lindy's Audio Cafe, a podcast focused on positive and thought-provoking stories. Life gets busy, and in the race for happiness, we sometimes forget it's often the smaller things in life that truly matter. My podcast is focused on the stories that don't make tabloids, the basics that make you smile, the kindness of people who help make the world a better place. Yeah, we need a bit more of that. But before we get started, please be sure to hit subscribe on your podcast app so you don't miss future episodes. Thanks for listening. Well, hello there and welcome to Lindy's Audio Cafe. My name is Lindy and I'm absolutely delighted to join you once again today. Well, guess what? We have a special guest today and joining me from over 7,000 kilometers away via Zoom is a wonderful lady named Maureen Chadwick. Now, Maureen actually lives over in the United Kingdom. She's over in Lancashire. And she's the founder of Diabetes Complete Care. Now, she's also known as the Diabetes Lady. I think that's pretty cool. And I think I'd like to just start by welcoming Maureen and let's have a chat. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning, my love. How are you?
I am wonderful. Thank you. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing okay. I'm battling with a kitten at the minute, so I'm trying to get him out of my lap. Now.
That's okay. We've got a puppy behind me, 11-year-old puppy. So it's like having kids in the house.
It is indeed.
And I'm saying good morning to you, but it's not morning for you, is it?
No, it's actually 4:05 in the afternoon here.
4:05, and I've got 8:05 in the morning. Yeah. So breakfast time for me, tea time for you.
That's it. It is indeed.
So let's hear a little bit about this. When I first met you, I found out that you were known as the Diabetes Lady, and that really caught my attention. What can you tell me about yourself?
Right. So I'm a registered nurse. Okay. That's what you call them in Canada. So I started nursing in 1976, so I'm a bit of an old dog. So I've been nursing since then. And then I don't know how you'd call it in Canada, but over here it used to be an enrolled nurse, but not a registered nurse, but we were still on the register. And then they decided that they wanted them all to be degree nurses. So they were getting rid of the enrolled nurses. So if you wanted to be an RN or an RGN, registered general nurse, you had to retrain. So I went away and retrained for a year and came out as a registered general nurse and ended up working with children with diabetes. And I just fell in love with diabetes. But a job came up in the town where I live, which is Preston, for a nurse manager. And I went for it and I got it. So I did that for a little while. And then I went off to Dubai for 6 months, came home, and then got back into nursing in diabetes and ended up being a nurse consultant for diabetes, which is at the top of the ladder in the east of England. Then I came back, that role ended, and I gave up. I gave up nursing. I thought, that's it. I'm leaving. I'm not having anything more to do with it. And I learned how to do French polishing. So I learned from an artisan how to do French polishing, and that's what I started doing. And I really loved it. I really was in my own little, had my own studio, loved it. But came back home to Preston again because I was like 500 mark. No. Well, never mind. Doesn't matter. I was the other side of the country anyway. So I came back home to Lancashire because up north, we tend to laugh at ourselves and we laugh at other people. And I love laughing. So I came home and then got back into nursing and was doing some research for one of the big professors in Liverpool, and then decided, I'm 55, I'm going to take early retirement. That's it. That's the end of it. Set up my own company, which was Diabetes Complete Care Limited, and did some education for a local authority in primary care, which is out in the community. So I trained, it was to deliver education we call them general practitioners here, but they might be family doctors where you are. Okay. And then we have what's called a practice nurse, which is a nurse that does general nursing, but within a GP practice or a family doctor's practice. So I was educating them around the delivery of diabetes in the surgery. So I did that, and that was really successful, but we didn't have any more work after that. So I had to go back into nursing. So I went back into nursing. That was cool. Fine. And then we had COVID, and I worked all the way through COVID, and then I was working for a nurse agency in January. I joined them, and I'd sent them a CV in, and this guy who was the recruiter, he went, after I'd been working for him for a couple of months, he went, "You're a diabetes specialist nurse." I went, "Yes, I know. I've been looking at you online. I put your name online and all this stuff came up about you being the diabetes lady." He said, "You've got your own business." And I went, "Yes." And he said, "Right." He said, "Well, I'm going to find you work for diabetes." So I've ended up working in family doctor's surgery, so general practice. And for 3 days a week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I deliver diabetes to the patients in about half an hour away from where I live. And I absolutely love it.
That's interesting. So when you say you deliver diabetes, are you providing education to the patients?
Well, it's about education. It's monitoring their diabetes. It's making sure, because we have, like you do in Canada, because I've actually looked it up. We go by, and across the world, it's the same way. You always have set guidance. And we have what's called NICE, which is the National Institute of Central Excellence, is it? Clinical Excellence. And they give us guidance that we have to follow to make sure that people with chronic diseases, whichever one it is, mine is diabetes, that they've got set parameters that they expect of somebody. So to make sure that that person living with diabetes always meets the guidance to ensure that they have a normal, healthy life. There's some for type 1, some for type 2, some for pre-diabetes, some for pregnant women. They look at hypertension, like high blood pressure. So everything's kidney failure. Everything is in those NICE guidance. So, but I tend to be a little bit more person-centered. So I look at the person will come in and we introduce ourselves and we sit down. Usually from my room, there's lots of guffaws and laughter. Because sometimes they'll come in and I say, "I'm a nurse, I'm not a priest, so I'm not here for confession." So they'll sit there and they start confessing about what they've eaten and what they haven't eaten. So then I then fall about laughing because I can't believe it. But I love them. Because each one that walks through my door has got a different story and a different way that they look at their diabetes. And then I'll say to them, "Right, let's start again." So I do lots of drawing. So I always have a pen and I always have paper and I end up drawing stuff for them. "Oh, right." And it clicks. I tell the patients about this guy because I thought I'd done something wrong. It was about 2 weeks ago. And we were speaking and I have half an hour sessions with them. We were speaking and all of a sudden it was time for him to leave. But he got back of his chair and then just stood there bolt upright, looking really bemused. So I said, "Are you okay?" And he went, "Yeah." And I said, have I said something that's offended you, upset you? Is there something wrong?" He said, "No." He said, "We've been in here in this half an hour and I've learned more about my diabetes in this half an hour than I've done in all the times that I've visited." And I stand there and I'd sit there and I think, "Oh my God, that is so weird. What have I said?" But then somebody yesterday did exactly the same thing with me. And they say it's because I'm no nonsense. I'm just direct and say it as it is. But I explain everything that I'm doing. So, and people seem to like, and they actually make lifestyle changes, which is like magic. They think it's funny because we, if people are watching who've got diabetes that are in your area, they will understand that they have to have, I don't know whether they measure fructosamine over there rather than blood sugars, but here when they prick their fingers, they're checking for their blood sugars. I think in America, I'm not sure if they do it in Canada, they check for fructosamine, which is still the same part of the blood, but it's how you do it. But the standard is that you do it by, we call it an HbA1c. Over in America, they call it an A1c. And it was set up. So it was done so that you get a quarterly blood sugar. And from that quarterly blood sugar, we can tell whether you're in good control or bad control because we have a set criteria. And that's how we work. But I explain all that to them. But they're hilarious. They laugh at me because they'll come in and I haven't met some of these people. So I've only been there since July. And they'll come in and I look at what their past records are. And like yesterday, somebody come in and it dropped. Now it might only drop by 1 point over like a 6 month period, which is quite a long time to just drop it by 1 point. But I sit there and I go, oh my God, this is so good. You've dropped it by a point. And they look at me as if I'm off the head. But I know that I haven't got diabetes myself, but I know that type 2 diabetes, it's so easy to put weight on. It's so, because we're older, and it's so easy to just think, oh, bugger it, and just, excuse my French, but yeah, you know what I mean? I'm just going to do whatever I want and do it. And then it gets out of control and out of hand. So to get this mad nurse who sits there and goes, oh my God, this is so good, is, I think it must be encouraging, because then we just sit and laugh. And because there was a lady that came in with her husband the other day, and he said, she insisted on coming in. And I said, well, I like it when the Rottweiler comes in. So he sat there and he says, what do you mean? And she's laughing. And I said, because what you don't hear, she will hear, because men are known for selective hearing. Oh. So the pair of them like laughing their head off. And the wife said, this is better than a counselling session, though, because all we did was laugh. So that's Maureen.
That's great. But you are right. Actually, in any kind of medical appointment, having a second person there, often they will remember things, because you can get focused on one thing and they'll hear that extra thing that happens on the side. So that is definitely worth noting.
Yeah.
And I like the way that you encourage people as well, too, because I know myself, if I'm dealing with anything physical, the last thing you want to do is go in and feel like I'm in trouble.
But they do. That shocks me that they come in, because when I first started there, they used to come in and they used to sit down and they'd say to me, come on then, I know I'm in trouble. And I sat there, this one man came in and did it, and I went like this. And he said, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm looking for the person who's going to shout at you. Like, this is just all about laughing. And that's what it's like, because if you've got to be, you're going into the personal side of somebody's life, and you've got to be able to connect, and you've got to be able to connect instantly, and you've got to let them feel relaxed, because I'm going to be taking their blood pressure. So the way I look at it, if I'm going to be doing all these tests on them where they're sat with me, and they're tense and they're frightened and they're anxious, the blood pressure is going to go through the roof.
Oh, absolutely.
But if I'm sitting there, and although it might seem to anybody on the outside looking that I'm mocking, I'm not mocking, because I'm not laughing at them. I'm laughing with them.
Yeah.
They're probably laughing at me, but I don't care, because the result that I want is for them to change the lifestyle and to have, when I see them again, know that they can come through the door and they're not going to be chastised like a child. Because at the end of the day, you're grown-ups, aren't you? So you know what's right and what's wrong. So it's like they'll come in and I'll say, do you smoke? Yeah. And then I carry on and they say, you're not going to say anything. And I say, well, you're an adult. You know what it does. It's not for me to tell you. I said, and I'm an ex-smoker, but I stopped in 1991 and I said, I can't stand the smell of it. I said, but if you're smoking and you make that choice, that's your choice. But then I've had another lady this week, and she said she's reading this book called Alan Carr's How to Quit Smoking. And he said, don't do it cold turkey. So don't stop altogether. He says, just read my book, and by the end of my book, you'll have stopped smoking. She's down to half a cigarette and she's nearly stopped smoking.
Wow, that is incredible.
That's just from reading this man's. And he's known as a comedian here in Britain.
Wow.
And that's just from reading his book.
That's amazing.
Like, oh my God, that's really cool. But I write it all in the notes. The doctors, when they read my notes, they must think, what the hell is she doing in that room? Because I put things like, such a body's HbA1c's dropped, so I've congratulated them. I'm really impressed.
And that's great.
Yeah, but they must look thinking, what is she doing? But that's how I do it, because it's about them, not me.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful. And it's that people aspect that you've put on. And I love the fact that you say people do not get chastised, because I know, you know, not that it's related, but I go to the dentist and get told, are you doing this? Are you doing that? It drives me nuts. I can't stand it. It's like, because like you say, we're adults. We're not children when you go in there. And you should never go to somebody that's helping you with your stomach in knots because you're afraid that I'm going to go in there and be made to feel this high.
But,
And that's probably why you're getting good results with the people that you work with, because they are comfortable with you and they do feel good about it. And dietary changes is a tough one. And I'm going to admit right now, I think I have a sugar addiction. I really do. And I'm working really hard to cut it back.
But that's understandable, because because you're younger than I am. When I was growing up, to have sweets was like a luxury, or candy, as you call it. Do you call it candy or sweets?
I have both.
So
I consume
me,
it all. I'm bad.
To go to a shop and we were buying sweets, because we don't call it candy, we call it sweets here.
Okay, yeah, we would
it was
say
a
candy.
Treat. Yeah, so it was a sweet. It was a treat, and you got it as a way of a reward rather than a punishment. But you know what I mean. You couldn't just, like kids now, just walk into shops after school and they just buy whatever they want and come out. We never did that, because you used to have to ask, or your mum would say, would you like this? Yes. But you would never just go in and get about four or five different bars of chocolate or whatever.
Oh gosh, no.
But they do now, because there's so much. I think that's going to change, because the way my bank's dwindling, I think that's going to change soon, because we just can't afford it. We just can't afford it the same as what we did.
It's a luxury. And I know when I was a kid, I mean, we, you know, when I was 12 years old, we were babysitting and looking after no neighborhood kids. Yeah. You'd earn your money. And what was the first thing that we did? Hop on our bike, pedal over to the corner store and we'd buy a candy.
Yeah. And, well, that's it. Because that's what kids do.
You would do that. But now, as an adult, I can look at things that I'm doing and go, oh my goodness, I'm afraid to tell Maureen what I eat.
But you see, that's it, because then you'll see me as the priest. I'm not a priest.
No, you're
so
good.
I look at it is that there are ways that if you want to be naughty, there are ways to be naughty. I haven't got pen and paper near me. Because if you want to be naughty, there are ways to do it. And the ways to do it are, so say I have patients, older generation patients, who were used to having, I don't know whether you call it a sweet or a dessert, we'd call it pudding here. So if they wanted pudding after they'd had their main meal. I might have a chocolate mid-evening while I'm watching the television. And I say, you see, now that's wrong. And they say, why? Because if you're doing it after you've eaten and you're having it midway through the evening, your blood sugar's going to spike. And then it's going to go up and come straight back down again. And it's those spikes that create your HbA1c to go up. But if you cut back on your main meal, because now low carbs are all the fashion, and I'm not saying that because it's working. So if you have, like, over here in England, we probably have meat and two veg, which is basically meat, potato and vegetables. Okay.
Yeah.
So I say to them, cut on the potatoes, don't have as many potatoes, just have the meat and the vegetables and a smaller portion of the potatoes. Then if you do that, you can have your pudding, because as your food, because you've eaten it all at the same time, as it goes up, it makes a nice gentle curve, as it should do, and stays in the body longer. But if you eat the potatoes and the pudding, you make a bigger curve. So the bigger curve is going to cost you and make your HbA1c go up. And it's just a simple thing, but it makes them mindful of what they're putting in their mouths, because they're stopping and they're thinking about what's on the plate.
I've just learned something new already, because I am an after dinner snacker, and I'm going to confess. Okay. I know you're not a priest, but I'm confessing. I have a thing for lactose free ice cream. I get this lactose free ice cream.
How much sugar is in it?
I'm not sure. I'd have to go read the container. I'm not really sure, but I have an
just
ice cream.
Just have a look, because if it's lactose, does it taste sweet, or does it taste the same as ordinary ice cream?
It's the same to me. It's really good. It's really good. And I put it in an ice cream cone almost every night after dinner. I have an ice cream cone, and then I go, the cone's too small, and I go back and put more in a bowl. So it's bad.
Just check on the sugar amount, because if it's, and when you're in the shop, the store buying it.
Yeah.
Just compare it to ordinary ice cream.
I will
just
do
see,
that for sure. It's a good point.
Just see if it's less sugar, because it, in my head, because it hasn't got the toes of the lactose in it, because lactose is a sugar. If they're adding sugar to it, are they adding too much sugar, or are they adding less sugar? So the lactose free, in my head, because the way my brain works, I'm thinking, well, surely there's less sugar in it, but it would be the amount they added in. And then what you need to look for then is lactose free ice cream with no added sugar. It will still stay sweet, but it won't be as sweet.
And I think it says no added sugar. I'm going to have to go back and have a look again. It's the same one I've been getting for a long time.
Yeah.
There's things I've been looking at. And I think actually since I met you on that course that we were on together, I started thinking more about my sugar intakes. And I have a family member, not immediate family, but I do have a relative who had type 2 diabetes.
Yeah.
So it's always in the back of my mind that, okay, there was somebody in my family that had it. I should pay a bit of attention to this.
Yeah.
And there's a few things I do, like I have coffee sweetener that I put in every morning. It's high in sugar. It's got lots of sugar, but I crave it.
But is it sweetener or is it sugar?
It's cream. It's like an almond
cream.
Oh, right,
I see.
It's like one of those things. It's like the thickened cream, but it's made.
Oh, yes, I know what you mean. Yeah.
It's almond based, but it's got lots of sugar. It tastes so good, but I know I need to cut back on it. And then there's things I've never thought about. Okay, so when I make spaghetti, I don't do it from scratch. I'm dad. I just go and there's a ready-made one that I get from our local store. I get this marinara sauce. And then one day I'm looking at the sugar on it going, there's a
because
lot
if
of
you,
sugar
because,
in that. Yeah.
Because if I was to make a spaghetti sauce or a ragu, I'd make it from scratch. Now, I know that you watch the telly and they say, put a spoonful of sugar. I never put sugar. Yeah. I've never put sugar in it because that's the way my mum taught me to make it. So I've never put sugar in it. But as a child, I wouldn't eat eggs. So to thicken the sauce, my mum always used to put an egg in it to get eggs inside of me. And for a long, long time, because I thought that's how you made it, that's what I did until she told me one day that was the reason she put eggs in, was to make me eat eggs.
Eggs in the tomato sauce?
Yeah, in a tomato sauce. You don't see it. You don't notice it. She used to whisk it up and then blend it in. You don't know it. But if you've got some, because I'd come out in this rash as a baby or as a child. So they thought I was allergic to eggs. And then they realized that I wasn't, but I wouldn't eat them because I'd got it in my head that I was allergic to it. And that's how she got it. But when I was pregnant with my son, I craved eggs. Like, I don't know what, boiled eggs. I couldn't get enough of them.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
And speaking of the pregnancy thing, do you get very many people coming in who are pregnant and they've got pre-gestational diabetes? Do people get
sent to you for that? No, we don't actually see them in the GP practice because if they go to most of we don't do them in the practice. They go to the hospital, so they'll go to an antenatal clinic or they'll go to they go there. And if we had somebody who was a younger, because I have in the past dealt with people who are young who have got diabetes, and we send them to preconception clinics because it's always better. And especially like a young person with type 2 diabetes, it's important that they go to preconception. It's always important to go to preconception clinics so that you've got your control as near normal as possible before you get pregnant. Because if you have got a high blood sugar and you don't know you've got diabetes and then you get pregnant, sometimes there can be complications from that.
Oh, interesting.
So they did a lot of research. When I was working over in the east of England, there was, I don't know, she might be a professor now, Dr. Helen Murphy, I think she was. And she did a lot of research around type 2 diabetes in younger people, because as younger people nowadays get bigger, they've got more chance of getting type 2 diabetes, which is what, I mean, I get people coming to see me and they're like in their 40s and I'm like shocked because I don't, in my head, because I'm old school, I don't think of a 46-year-old having type 2 diabetes. I think of a more mature person like me. An old biddy. I'm in it.
You are not an old biddy.
I am. I'm 64, for God's sake. Oh,
well, that's not an old lady. That's not old at all. That's just somebody who's got a little bit of wisdom years behind her, but you're not old. But, you know, you've actually brought to light a whole other thing, because that was something I was wondering about. I know that some people get type 1 when they're a lot younger. Like, can you be born with type 1 diabetes, or is it something that just...
I don't know, because I've looked after children, like I say, with type 1 diabetes, and I have had babies, not newborn babies, but I have had, I've had toddlers that have come, or people, even little ones that are not even a year old that have had type 1. And that's really difficult because you're coping with the fact the mother has to inject the baby. She has to make sure that it eats. And then you go through all the terrible twos and the horrible threes, and they're awkward, aren't they? They're just awkward children. So you've got all of that to deal with. Then you've got the teenage and all the hormones. And it's the same with women when they've got their periods or when they're going through the menopause. And menopause is a big thing, but don't get me into it, because I just think, pull your big knickers up and get on with it. I had to, so get on with it and stop making a big fuss. Yeah. But they're now getting days off for it. So I was born far too early. I should have been born now. I'd have been all right now. I'd never be at work. I'd be, it's all right. I'm having a menopause day.
Oh, my goodness. I won't even comment. I'm mid-50s. I'm not even going to comment on that one.
I know. It is. It's just...
But it's interesting because there's so much maintenance for somebody as well, too, with diabetes. And I know I worked with somebody who was, I believe, a type 1 diabetic a few years back. And I encountered a situation where I wasn't really aware of what to look for. And I was on a lunch hour where this person was supposed to be helping me answer the phones at a place I was working. This was like 15, 20 years ago. And I'm yelling out for this person, can you grab the phone? Because I'm helping somebody at the front counter. And this person's not picking up the phone, and I turn around and he's sleeping at his desk. He's just sleeping at his desk, and he was having some kind of a sugar low or something.
As soon as
I saw that, I just dropped everything, ran and grabbed one of the managers and said, you know, because I'm busy helping, so you got to help him. He needs some help. And they woke him up, and he just needed to have a drink of juice. And
yeah, he just needed some sugar inside of him, and he was fine.
Yeah, he had gotten quite sleepy. And do you think it's important when you work alongside somebody that has it to understand it, to know what to look for so that you can
help? I mean, I know that there are places, because somebody has suggested that to me, to go into workplaces and talk about diabetes, but which is all well and good, but I can't get my head around it. But then I suppose that's because I like working with individuals rather than groups, because when you're doing it as a group as well, you can get misquoted or misunderstood because the interpretation of somebody. So it sounds as if I'm not doing it, it probably isn't the, because I can think of other areas in which I should do it as a group. But say like him, so if he had type 1 diabetes, because as these kids are growing up, and especially in the teenage years, they want to be the same as everybody else. So they learn not to tell anybody.
Oh, I get that.
And they become, make it so it's secretive. And they'll go and they'll inject their insulin, they'll go and inject it in the toilet. And we'll say to them, don't inject it in the toilet. Do it when you start having your meal, because it works straight away. But a lot of young ones now, they have the insulin pumps, which is just magic, because it means that they're actually living as normal a life as their peers. And yes, they will have hypers or low blood sugar, but the machines that are on, the technology, lets them know in advance before it happens. So it's changed a lot since when I started diabetes, started working in it, and I go even further back to when I was a student nurse on the wards, and the insulin in the fridge used to be in like the little vials, but they were all in different concentrate. And then the insulin changed and it became, so you'd have like 80 units to a mil. So you'd have to like work it out how many units it was. That was just too much for me. So most nurses used to walk 10 foot round a bed because they didn't have to get involved in any of that. But then they changed it so it was 100 units of insulin to a mil. So it makes it a lot easier. So you can give like 0.1 is like one unit. And it is so much easier now. But again, it was the drawing up on the needles and syringes. And then the early 90s, they then brought out the pens that they have now, which they dial up and just inject. And the needles are so small and so fine. It's come, if you think, because people take it for granted now, but if you think, it's only been 100 years since they discovered insulin, and it just blows my brain, because I'm very sad, but it does, because I get so excited about it, because I love it. But it isn't just about, it's the diabetes and the different effects it has on people, but it's the people themselves. So I could see you, and then I could see the next person coming through the door, you'd have the same type of diabetes, you'd be on, say, insulin, both be on insulin, but your story will be a different story to their story. And that's what I love about it, because it means that I don't know what's coming in through my door.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And so does everybody, are they all impacted differently by it? Like, do some people have different side effects compared to other people, or is everybody pretty
much the same? because like with type one and type two, people think that if you got type two and you end up on insulin, you've got type one. You haven't. Type two, your pancreas is always still working, so you're still producing insulin, but you may be that you're resistant to your insulin, so it's not working in the same.
Oh,
it's not as. So that's what a lot of type 2s are, insulin resistant. And they get to a point where they're so resistant to it that we have to give them insulin because the drugs aren't working anymore. So over here, I don't know what you call it over there, but over here we would start somebody on type 2, if their blood sugars were high-ish, we would start them on a drug called metformin. So we start them off on metformin. And then, Some people give them the full dose all in one go, and then they end up having side effects.
Oh dear.
I tend to, which is, I think it is now for most of us over here now, we titrate it up slowly. So you start them off on one tablet. I do it even slower than everybody else probably. But I do that because I probably tend to mollycoddle my patients only because I want them to take the tablet. Because if I do it too quick and they have side effects, and I do say this to them, if you have a problem, you have to come back and tell me and we'll look and find you something else. But they don't want to bother with the practice, so they don't get in contact with you, and then they don't take the tablets. And the next time they come in, the blood sugars are really high. So you've to then find something to bring it back down again.
So you can actually prescribe medication yourself?
I'm a nurse prescriber. Not all nurses can. But I can, because I did my nurse prescribing course. So in the GP practice, I prescribe. So, so I'm a nurse prescriber. And it is neat because, and especially with the insulin, because, but I understand, and I understand the different types, because you'll have the ones that are short acting, then you have the long acting, then you have ones that are sort of like last 24 hours. And then you've got the new injectables now that everybody's using for losing weight, and we can't get hold of them because we need them for patients with diabetes, and people who are on slimming or having them.
Oh my goodness. There's so much to learn.
Type two is more complicated than type one.
Really?
People think type one is more complicated, but it's not. The pancreas isn't working. So you've got to you've got to give them the insulin, so that's, they have the insulin, and then it's about titrating the insulin properly for them, for their needs.
Wow.
And then you change it goes up as they grow, and then it comes back down again depending on activity. But it's like, I had a young person that I used to go and see, and on sports day we used to say to him, right, today's physical education, so on this day make sure you have something to eat before you do and something to eat afterwards, because the metabolism still carries on afterwards.
Okay.
So the blood sugars can drop. So you're doing it to create a buffer. But he used to have an effect with two different kinds of breakfast. So if he had Kellogg's cornflakes, he could go and do his football and he'd have no problems. But if he had Weetabix, which for me I would think of as being more of a complex carbohydrate, he used to hypo. But that was unique to him. That's what I mean, because about how it's so interesting, because everybody is different, and you have to take that into account. You have to take that into account. And
that's,
you have to take into account like social situations. Like, I was doing hypo research before, though it's like a big thing now, but I was doing it back in 2011 I started, 2013, and I was doing this research for this consultant that I was working for, and it was looking at the patients that had come into the hospital through emergency department and had come in by ambulance because they'd had a hypo or a low blood sugar. And we were finding, I was finding, that one particular drug was affecting older people, and they were having these bad hypos and having car accidents. This one in particular had a car accident because of it. So it it was good because that knowledge is in here. So if I see that drug, I get really upset. And I get really upset if I see a young person on it because I say, why are you on it? And I take it off. I'm not popular with the doctors because I do it, but it's because of the knowledge that's in here and because of what I've seen, so I won't let it happen. But I know that for older people that have got type 2 diabetes, you've got to be careful of the medication they're on, because the way they metabolize their medication could be slower than what a younger person does. So it could peak in the middle of the night, and they could have, and this is not to frighten whoever's watching this, because whoever your healthcare professional is looking after them, I'm just telling you this because this is how a healthcare professional looks at it. And I always remember this older lady coming in with her daughter, and I was watching a specialist nurse. I was one of my colleagues. And this older lady came in, and she lived alone, and she was on insulin. And the nurse, not me, the other nurse, she was saying she wanted her to put her insulin up. And I was sat there, and I had to keep my mouth shut because I was shadowing and I was watching her work, and it wasn't for me to interfere because it was her consultation. And she kept saying to this old lady, or this mature lady, you need to put the insulin up at night. And she kept saying, I'm not going to do. And she said, but you need to, because your HbA1c is too high and we need to get it down. And the more she said it, the more you could see that it was getting fraught between this mother and daughter. And I was sat there and I was thinking, she's not going to do it because she's worried that in the middle of the night, and we're talking 2 and 3 in the morning, she's going to have a nighttime hypo and she lives alone. And she's got nobody there to catch her if she falls. And this lady had told her all this, and she still insisted. And she wrote in her diary that she was putting the insulin up, and she left this lady really disgruntled. And I thought, she's not going to do it. She's not going to change it. So you have to. So that's what I mean. When you go to see a health professional, sometimes they need to understand your story, and they've got to look at the bigger picture. It isn't just about the pancreas. It's about you, the person. And that's how I like to see it. And I'm very good at picking up vibes off people. If they're, I'll say to them, oh, what's going on? Everything's fine. Any stresses? Have you had any illnesses over the last 3 or 4 months? Everything been okay? Well, actually, I've had this, and this happened at the moment. There was one yesterday. I've got all this stress going on, la, la, la. And I said, well, that's probably why your HbA1c's up, because stress makes your blood sugars go up.
Oh, interesting.
Makes your blood sugars go up. And it does that. You don't have to have diabetes. It's our natural way that our body works.
I didn't know that.
So it goes up because corticosteroids are produced to fight off an infection. And when that happens, your blood sugars go up. So somebody who's already got problems with their blood sugar, it will do, but then it'll go up. If you say you've got somebody on type 1, they know if they're coming down with an illness, because for 3 days, I've got the cat fighting me, so I'm having to get all the strings away. For 3 days, the blood sugar goes up, and then it drops all of a sudden. It goes back to normal again, and they're looking at it, why? And then they'll come out with cold, or they'll come out with flu, and that's the reason, because the body's getting ready for this infection that's coming.
Oh, that's interesting. And then that actually brings up a whole other topic as well, because if you have diabetes, that does make you more immune compromised, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Like,
So I know with respiratory illness and things like that, they probably have to be a lot more careful.
Yeah, they do.
I would guess with that.
And
as
I
well.
Could, and it was really strange because I could never understand, whenever I worked in a nursing department, asthma, respiratory problems was always grouped together with diabetes. And I used to think, what the hell has your lungs got to do with diabetes? Could never get it. And then when I went to work in this GP, the first GP practice I went to work, no, the second one I went to work in, and I went to listen to this lady about asthma, who was also a lady who did a lot of work in diabetes. And I like her. She's a really lovely lady. She says it. She's another one that says it as it is. And she was saying, that if you've got somebody that's got COPD, will it, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. That's what it's called in England.
Yeah.
So it's
pretty
when,
close.
Yeah. So it's there's asthma and then there's COPD, which are totally different things.
Yeah.
And so they said, if somebody's got diabetes and their diabetes sugars are high, that's going to make them more susceptible to infections. So you've got to get the diabetes control better so that their COPD doesn't get compromised and they don't get chest infections. And wow. I actually had somebody in this week, and she was sent, and I said, yeah. So I was telling her the story, and they started laughing. They said, we never realized that, because our chest has actually been quite good this year. And I said, well, it's because your control's really good. I said, if your control's good, you've got less likelihood of having an exacerbation, they call it, of your COPD or your asthma.
So and there's all the link. Yeah, like this trickle-down effect, right? Yeah.
So you sort of tend to think of diabetes as just being about the pancreas, but it's not, because it affects the eyes. They've linked it to Alzheimer's, because they're saying that, because another thing that I say to people, God, I'm giving all my secrets away now. So I say, so this, I don't know whether you can see it or not. So this here, can you see that?
Yeah.
Chart with all the numbers on it.
Okay.
So that's my HbA1c chart. So if I was seeing you, so for normal blood sugars in type 2 diabetes and type 1, you expect it to be where my two fingers are. Can you see that?
Okay.
As you get more mature, you don't metabolize your blood sugars the same as you did when you were a younger person, because you're not moving around. You're not burning off the same amount of energy as you once did. So that does it. So if I'm trying to explain how bad it is when I'm talking about their HbA1c, I'll say to them, close your eyes. I say, right, now think of really watered down runny honey. So they go, yeah. I say, right, that's normal blood sugar. I said, right, now think of a spoonful of golden syrup and it dripping. See how thick it is? That's your blood sugar is a little bit higher. Oh, right. See, like black treacle now. So that's got even thicker now. And that's running around in your system. Oh, right. Now think of molasses. Mm-hmm. And you go, right. And I say, right. Yeah. So where am I then? I say, you're more golden syrup, but you're getting into black treacle. So you have to be careful. And you go, right, Mona, get that. Because people, you get a book. I've got lots of book about pre-diabetes. And once I've done that book that I've done, which is the log book that I've done that you know about, which is where we met. So I've done that. I did it because Lindsay had told us how to, this is the course that we went on, so our course leader. She showed us how to do what we were doing. And this young lady has done loads before that. In fact, I've actually got one of her books, which is marvellous. So I haven't got it here. Where is it? It's here. So you need to get that book. Okay.
That's mine.
I know it's yours.
Yeah.
Okay. And I've got one from a friend, so I've got to drop it off.
Yeah. I'm so excited. Look, we're 7,000 kilometers apart. And look, we've got the same book. I love it.
Because you told us about it. And I thought, I have to have one of them. And my friend was complaining about the fact that she kept forgetting all her passwords. So I said, I've got something for you. So I've got one for her as well.
You've made me so happy.
You're very sad and you're very happy, easy to please. I was telling you now, this is old age that's creeping up on me.
Numbers and
that, and the honey. And
and that made sense to me.
Yeah,
that.
It does. So when you do it like that, and that's what I was saying about the book. So I want to do it. So I did that as a start off my book, which is this one, which is the
It says right on it, my diabetes logbook. So what kind of things would people track in your... Now, this is a logbook.
Yeah. Right, so in this logbook, at the beginning of it, it's got things like you and your diabetes team. So you can put in you and your diabetes team. Okay. And then on this side, it's got all your diabetes appointments. So I tried to think about... I was looking at it as the journey that you go on. So I started off with that. Then I did a few pages that have got like your medications, because the medications change. And if you're going to different places and they want to know, you've got it all there documented. So they can't sort of like, can't say anything because you've got it. And then on the double page, I've done like can you see that?
Yeah.
So on this page, on that page, it's got all your blood sugars. And then it's got what blood sugars, if you take them, because not everybody takes blood sugars and your blood pressure. And the reason I did it like that was because when you open it up, if I have a diary, I haven't got one with me. If I get one off the company, they're really tiny. You can't log anything. And if, and then, or else they go out of the doctor's surgery and they've got lots of bits of paper. But I thought, if I did it all in one place,
I agree.
At least, and if they did it on a, a page by page, so that is one day. That's not 2 days. That's one day's worth.
So there's so a lot. There's so a lot to even, track.
Yeah. So even on that, but they don't have to, because here in England, if they're on tablets and they're on tablets that don't cause you to have a low blood sugar, you don't need to test your blood sugars because we know how you're doing by your HbA1c, which is so important for you to go to your doctor's appointments so that we can help you. So if there's something wrong, we can get, we can do something. Now here in England, can't go by the rest of the world because everywhere does it differently because they've got their own set of guidance. So say you're newly diagnosed, you'd come for your first appointment, we'd go through everything, we'd take your bloods, we do a full assessment of you. So we make a new appointment, so you go every year to get the back of your eye checked. We check your feet so that we've got a standard of your feet. And then we ask you loads of questions, ask you if you smoke, et cetera, take your blood pressure. Now, if your HbA1c is really high and you have to be on medication, we'd give you the medication or what it is, and then we'd titrate it up slowly. And we would probably ask to see you again. But if you don't need anything and you're just controlled by your diet, and we'll just show you how to eat so you can eat. Because I like people to eat. I always say to people, you've got to remember you were here before the diabetes. So the diabetes has to live with you, not you live with the diabetes. I'm giving out my secrets here. I'm going to have all the GPs that I work for come down on me with a big stick. But I do it like that because it then doesn't feel as if it's a massive, big burden. When I started in diabetes and I used to do education for like healthcare professionals, I used to say that people come in and they see life. No, they see diabetes like this and they see their life like this. So it changes. I said, I want people to see life like this and diabetes like this, because in a lifespan of you and I, our life, if we had diabetes, diabetes is just one of the shopping bags that we carry. It's not all the troubles that we have. The troubles impact on the diabetes, but the diabetes shouldn't impact on your life. And the ones, I had a lady in the, this week, she made me laugh. She walked in, she went, I know I'm in trouble. And I went,
oh no, okay, the in trouble thing again.
So I said, she'd never met me before. And I went, oh, are you? She said, yeah. So I just ignored her and carried on. And then she said, I said, oh, I haven't done your blood results. Because I usually do the blood results first, because I go through them all. And if I do it all, because it's top to toe, it's like a learning tool, so I can teach them, because the blood results are about them, not about me. So they need to understand what these blood results are. The same as I say to them, you need to know what your blood pressure is, because it's your blood pressure, not my blood pressure. Do you understand what the blood pressure is measuring? Well, no. So then you have to explain all of that. And I was explaining cholesterol to a guy the other day, and he went, oh my God, he said, I didn't know all of that. The people that walk in here that don't give a monkey's elbow, they're the ones that get a better blood sugar than the ones who are stressed about it. Because if you're stressed about it, your blood sugars go up because you're stressed.
So oh, interesting.
If the ones that come in with a relaxable, they're the ones that come in with better HbA1c's.
So it sounds like good advice. It sounds to me like if I'm capturing this right, what you're basically telling people is be proactive. You know, look after your body, but don't stress, because if you stress on top of being proactive, now you're adding to the pile
you
need to be calm. Yeah.
Yeah, because like this lady came in yesterday and she was, and I said, what's been going on? She says, well, I've had two chest infections. So I went, right, okay. She said, but it had only gone up slightly. She's got had two chest infections. I've got all these stresses. And I said, well, it's no wonder your HbA1c has gone up. I said, if you start doing X, Y, and Z, and we were discussing it, I said, you may find it, and you've got rid of all these stresses. You're under pressure. And if you're under pressure, or you, another lady came in, her HbA1c is like nominal, but she's got a really high pressure job. And I went, well, there you go. When do you eat? And I said, I bet you have your main meetings at lunchtime. She said, yeah, we do. I said, so you don't get a lunchtime, do you? No. And I do like little things. And I say, go no longer than 5 hours between each meal. If you have, I said, make sure you have 3 meals a day, but don't go any longer than 5 hours. And I said, and if you go longer than 5 hours and you, or you're going out for a meal with the husband or the boyfriend or whatever, or the taking the wife out, there you go, boys, I've got you in as well. Then always have about the normal time that you would have your evening meal, say 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock that people eat in England. I say, have something protein, just have something protein, even if it's just a piece of cold meat or it's a boiled egg. And they look at me and I say, it'll fill you up and take longer to digest, but it won't overfill you. And then when you go out for your meal, you're not past eating, but you'll eat sensibly because you've already got some food inside of you.
Makes sense.
And they look, yeah. And don't have the potatoes, and then you can have the pudding in the restaurant, because the pudding that you have in the restaurant is a smaller portion than you'd have at home. And they go, yeah, you're right. So no.
So basically, yeah. And you're saying if you're going to fill your plate, you can't fill it and then add on to it with sweets after. There isn't room. And to me, it almost makes sense, because I don't think of it from a diabetes standpoint, but I will often think of it from a calorie standpoint, going, okay, I'm allowed to have this much tonight. If I'm going to do this, I'm not going to get this and have this. Something's going to have to give. Of course, yeah. I can't have desserts all night. I can't decide that I'm going to just have desserts and put the meat aside. You still got to have the good.
Yeah, but that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I can't have my ice cream every night and turf out the potatoes. I got to have some potatoes too. But so much to maintaining it. And I mean, you've captured so much. I've learned so much in this time already. I mean, there's a lot of things I'm going to look at. And do you have any thoughts, before we wrap up here, just on dietary suggestions or anything that you would want to give out people, even if you don't have diabetes, things that you should watch for to make sure you're not overloading?
It's overloading with the carbs, because now, you see, I know it sounds crazy, but I actually, even though I'm a young person of 64, as you say it, but I actually think I'm fortunate, because I was brought up in an age where everything was made. So I live alone, so I don't have a partner. I have a cat and a dog now, God help me. But that's what I have at home, right? So I've got these two children living with me. And if I cook for me, so I'll come in from work and I'll cook for me. Occasionally I'll have a takeout, and then I berate myself for about 6 days about it. But if I have a takeout, I'll only eat half of it and I freeze the other half and have it another day.
Brilliant.
So that I'm not, because people, when you think of a culture, so like I'm half Maltese. So if I was to eat a Maltese food, there's lots of little different bits that you take and taste. So it's like, say you're Greek and you have a meze. You've got lots of different portions and you have a little bit of each ones. You go to a Spanish restaurant, you have a tapas. And you'll have a little bit of this and a little bit of that. If you go to a home of some, because I've had friends who were Indian or Asian, and I had one Asian friend and she was magic. She was a magic cook. But if she served a dinner and she was having a big dinner, they have lots of different things. They don't just have curry and rice. They'll have vegetables with it. They'll have the same as us, but they might be just a little bit spicier or in a sauce. But they have a little bit of each. They don't have a great big carton like we would have.
Yeah. And portion control.
And that's why I think that the world has become obese, because we don't stick to what we're used to eating. We eat everybody else's, but we eat everybody else's wrong. And we eat bigger portions. I went on holiday to Sorrento in April and it was freezing, but I went in April with my friend and we were having 3 courses every night. And I was thinking, oh, my God, I'll have put weight on by the time I get home. And when we got home to England, we were staying in a hotel overnight because we were late and we didn't want to drive back in the dark. And they served food. So we had a cooked English meal. I am not kidding you. It came piled like this. And we both sat back and looked at it. And I said, I thought I'd overeaten when I was in Italy. I hadn't. Because the pasta that they gave you is only a small swirl in the center of your plate. There's more plate than there is pasta.
Hmm.
And it made me stop and think. I have never liked, I'll eat it, but I've never been over fond of pasta. Never been over fond of pizza, but we've got a pizza house near here that I deliver from. And whereas I used to always get a big, because everybody always gets a big one, don't they? I don't now. I get the smallest one. And if I leave some, I leave some, but I don't worry about it as much as I did. But their toppings, I've always got a lot of toppings. So it's not all bread, it's topping. And I prefer that.
That's a great, like on the pizza, you've got lots of toppings. We do that at home. We actually, because I tend to eat gluten-free just for some dietary issues. And I get this gluten-free pre-made pizza crust from one of our local stores. And we bring it home. I will pack it literally 2 to 3 inches high with spinach on top. We chop up zucchini, spinach, red peppers, mushrooms.
Good.
It's so good. We put that all across the top, but it's funny how much it shrinks. You bake it and the spinach that's 3 inches high is suddenly flattened out.
But
we always try to do that. We just load that thing full of vegetables and it tastes great. And if you have a leftover chicken breast, sometimes we'll chop that up and put that on top too.
Yeah.
And then you're filling up partly on the toppings and a little bit on the crust, but it's not all about the crust, as you were saying, with the carbs, you know.
So that's my advice, is to reduce your carbs and have more. I mean, I don't say keto. I won't.
Because
people will go, the diabetics go mad. It's not that I go mad about it. I'm not. And you have to be careful, especially if you've got type 1 diabetes, because you need the carbohydrate. If you're on type 2 and you're on insulin, you need the carbs for the insulin. But you can reduce your insulin to meet the amount of carbs that you're having. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
People who are taking the insulin, they are so savvy. I really admired people who are doing insulin, because if I had diabetes, I have to be honest, I'd want to go straight onto insulin, because I know that what I'm putting in my body is going out of the body. It's not staying there. Whereas like things like the medication is either going through your kidneys or it's going through your liver. But that's how it is at the moment. And it may change. We'll just have to wait and see. But that is my thing. Don't eat any longer than 5 hours. You have 3 meals a day and you have a gap of 4 to 5 hours between each meal. And if you're going to go longer at the evening because you're going out for a meal, make sure at that 5th hour that you have some high protein snack, and it'll stay in your stomach, but it won't overload you for when you go for your meal. So don't
Sounds good. Don't overload your carbs because
people have carbs at breakfast, they have carbs at lunchtime, and then they have carbs at night. So you do have a lot of carbs. Not you, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, in people's diets in general. Yeah, absolutely.
And
so it's really good advice.
Yeah. And I tend to buy, I had actually bought a loaf of bread, and then I felt really guilty about it because I hadn't had bread in the house for God knows how long, and I was craving it. So I got it. And your body tells you what it wants because it's cold outside.
Yeah.
And when it's cold, you're going to eat more. You can't get out. So you're bored because you're sat at home. And you do eat more than what you do in the summer because you're out doing all the time. So you just have to watch what carbs you're putting in your mouth.
Yeah, good. Definitely some good pointers.
Yeah, and drink loads of fluid. That's what people don't. They don't drink lots of fluid.
That's right. And I have to remind myself. So I sit here at my desk. I've got my water bottle. I've got my canned water. I started out with my coffee with the bad creamer in it this morning. It's half caffeinated. I only do half caffeine, not full caffeine.
Oh, you're really good.
But, you know, I'm probably going to wrap it up here pretty quick.
Yeah, that's cool.
Because all this talk about food, now I'm getting hungry and I'm thinking I need to go and make some eggs. I love eggs. So I think I'm going to go and make myself a cheese omelet now.
Oh, that sounds good. Yeah.
Oh, this has been so great. I really appreciate your time this morning. I've learned a lot throughout this. And just a super quick note, too. I know you've got your diabetes logbook now as well. Yeah. What's it called again? It's called
My Diabetes Logbook, Food and Blood Sugar Diary.
Perfect. And people can find that on Amazon as well.
You can find it on Amazon. It's got my gorgeous
picture
on the back.
Stunning.
That's that. Yeah. And, I know.
And it'll have your picture on the back. And that's Maureen Chadwick for everybody. Anybody who's listening by audio, you'll know it's through Maureen Chadwick. So just search for that on Amazon. They'll find your book. And they can also find you online if they look for the Diabetes Lady. I think you're
and
on
if I've
LinkedIn.
Upset or offended anybody as well, I do apologize.
Oh, yeah. It's all right. I offend people all the time and I don't do it intentionally. So we just say we try to keep it all lighthearted and do our best.
Yeah.
But no, this is great. Thank you so much again. And I hope you have a wonderful day.
Well, it'll be an evening. I'm actually going to a 50th birthday party tonight.
Oh, you're going to that's a young one.
Yeah, it's a child's. I'm going to a child's birthday
party.
Yeah,
there
tonight.
You go. Enjoy it. Have fun.
I will
take
do.
Care.
Okay, bye-bye. Take care. Bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to click like and share it so others can enjoy it also. Join the Lindy's Audio Cafe podcast group for updates. Oh, and positive reviews are always welcome as well. Check the show notes for updated links. Thanks again for listening. Have a great day.